Welcome into the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. It has been a minute since I have recorded an episode, but we are back here on March 30th, 2021. Can't really remember what we discussed last time, but going forward, I'm going to be talking a little more sports and a little less politics as there's obviously a lot more going on in the world of sports than there is politics. However, the first topic I am going to cover today is the Missouri Senate race here in 2022, so over a year and a half away, but we are already seeing candidates be speculated about. Some candidates already jumping in and declaring their candidacies, etc., etc. The first person to announce on the Republican side was former Governor Eric Greitens. If you will recall, Greitens was essentially forced to resign. He would have been impeached by the Republican legislature for the fiasco that occurred, in which he cheated on his wife with his hairdresser and abused her, the hairdresser that is, in various forms and fashions, including taking nude photos of her without her consent, etc. Don't need to relitigate all of that story, but that is the reason why he resigned from office. Since then, he has divorced his wife. His wife has moved on to the University of Texas. So now he is a twice divorced, now single man here in the state of Missouri, running to revive his political career, hopefully for him, at the Senate level. On also the Republican side, the only other major declared candidate so far is Attorney General Eric Schmidt. He was appointed to be the Attorney General after the shakeup that proceeded from the Greitens resignation when Mike Parson moved up. A whole bunch of pieces moved around, but he is now the Attorney General. He did win, election, not really re-election, but election in 2020 by a considerable margin, as the Missouri Democratic Party has failed to really put together a slate of candidates and a message that is able to resonate with Missourians, particularly those in rural areas. So when they get spanked 80 to 20 in rural areas, there's really no chance and not enough voters in Kansas City and St. Louis to make up the difference. So anyway, he won his treasurer election in 2016, 56-39, and then in 2020, I'm looking it up here really fast, he won the general election 59-37. So also against a pretty flawed opponent whose issues came to light near the end of the race. Missouri isn't really competitive anymore. It makes me sad to say, but it's the truth. Also on the Republican side, there's a number of people looking at jumping into the race, but obviously there's some major players. Jason Smith, rep for the Boot Heel Southeast Missouri region. Pretty much everybody is saying, well, I'll take a look at it. So I'm not really going to talk about them unless they actually announce their candidacy. But the one point I do want to make, because at first when Greitens announced that he was going to run, the media kind of met it with, I don't know the word that I'm looking for, but kind of dismissive. They incorrectly, in my opinion, seem to think that because he resigned in disgrace which he did, that somehow that would preclude Missouri Republicans from nominating him again. And I am here to tell you that they are totally off base and wrong. The mood, the feeling of the Missouri primary electorate is not necessarily what the media thinks it is. The primary electorate on the Republican side is largely a majority, a large majority, I think, are the extreme Trump lovers. That is to say that they will vote for someone that they see as the anti-establishment person. Now, when the media or liberals or progressives or whoever look at Eric Greitens resigning in disgrace, they think that is a disqualifying factor that makes him toxic. And I'm here to tell you that it's the direct opposite. He is now stronger in those primary electorate's eyes than he was when he resigned from office. And I hope that I'm making a little bit of sense, or at least coming across in a way that people can understand that that's how it is. Eric Greitens, and I feel pretty convinced with this prediction at around 11 o'clock on March 30th, that Eric Greitens will win the Republican primary by a pretty substantial margin. If it's one-on-one, it might be closer when most of the establishment-type people rally around Eric Schmidt. I think it's kind of a blow-away if another major-ish candidate like John Bruner jumps in, or any of the local, not local, but House of Representatives, hops into the race. I think Eric Greitens wins it by 15 to 20 points in a 3+ way primary. And I put this out on Twitter a couple days ago before a couple of polls came out that do indeed show Eric Greitens with a pretty substantial lead. But I made the point that if you go, I live here in Vernon County, Nevada, Missouri. If you go out to any restaurant, and this is a very heavy Republican area, if you ask, who is Eric Schmidt? Blank stares. Nobody knows who the Attorney General is. Unless it is a major national fiasco and an attorney general is going after someone that's kind of universally hated or whatever. So imagine like the oil spill in the Gulf. When the attorney generals for Alabama, Louisiana, when they go after the oil companies for big old chunks of money, pretty much everybody is in support of that. They heard about it because obviously it was a national disaster. Other than those scenarios, people don't really give a shit about the attorney generals. Attorney general of any state. And if they do, they're either super plugged in and not really reflective of the general public, and or they're just a lawyer, which obviously lawyers aren't indicative of the overall general public. But if in that same diner where Eric Schmidt response gets blank stares, you hear about Eric Greitens, or you ask about Eric Greitens, there is a couple different responses, but I would say a heavy majority would be some version of the damn establishment, time to take them out, or something to that effect. To his credit, I mean, Eric Greitens has spun that narrative, and the hard right conservative media has allowed him to spin it how he has wanted. And so while it may not be a large portion of people on the Steve Bannon podcast or Newsmax or OAN, not a huge number, it is a considerable portion of the GOP primary electorate. And so say it's only 20% of the primary electorate for the Republicans. That is a really strong place to start with a low floor, especially if it gets to be a largely divided race with multiple candidates. If those 20% rally around Eric Greitens, which I think that they will, I mean, his job winning the nomination just got so much easier. And that's what I think happens, or will happen. I'm not going to speculate too much further on how it goes, just because we're not sure who's getting in and how people are going to respond as of yet. But I think it's Greitens' race to lose on the Republican side. So far, Scott Sifton, a state senator from St. Louis, is in the race and is at the moment the strongest candidate. I don't think he would win, or any candidate would win, barring some of these next few things that I'm going to talk about happening. But there is one really big wild card out there that could throw the race into competitive status, and that would be former Governor Jay Nixon, which was Greitens' predecessor in the governor's office, has speculated about running. We've seen multiple former governors run in Senate races, and pretty much none of them succeeded. But if Greitens wins the primary, which I think he does, and then it might become a different ballgame as far as competitiveness. I'm not going to say Jay Nixon would beat him, but I think it would be much more competitive. And if I were Jay Nixon, I would run as an independent. You can claim all the success and have the Democratic Party behind you, and then run the Bernie Sanders, Angus King, I'm an independent trope, which, as stupid as it is, does win over voters. That's just me, if I were spitballing with a Jay Nixon campaign. I think there's quite a few things that could go positive for him if he were to run as an independent. But it all depends upon how certain members of the Republican Party react when Eric Greitens wins the primary. If people like Caleb Rowden and Jay Barnes, the guy who's kind of in charge of the Greitens investigation, all come out strongly and say, we cannot vote for Eric Greitens, don't vote for Eric Greitens, then a Jay Nixon independent campaign might become an outlet, the way a Doug Jones in the Alabama Senate special election versus Roy Moore became an outlet when Jeff Flake donated to Doug Jones and a number of other Republicans said, well, I'm not going to vote for Roy Moore. That is the only scenario that leads to a Democratic win. And it would be narrow. That's the only way that they can pull off a win. I don't want to, well, I should, because there are some other candidates out there who could make it interesting or make a difference, but at the moment, with just the candidates who have really declared or really are interesting that have expressed interest, Jay Nixon, obviously, the top tier, best possible recruit that I think Democrats could get to run as an independent. But yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out. Obviously, we are still a long ways away from 2022 November, but a lot can happen between now and then. A lot of things on the national level might shake up. A lot of things on the state level might shake up. Who knows? But let's fit in an ad break here, and then when we come back, we will be discussing the quarterbacks of the NFL draft. Coming up next on the Just Above Average podcast. Welcome back to the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. So let's shift gears away from the politics to the NFL draft. The draft order was shaken up last week when the San Francisco 49ers, Miami Dolphins, and the Philadelphia Eagles made a kind of basically a three-way trade. Sure, it went one to one and then the other to the other. But anyway, the results of said trades were the San Francisco 49ers trade basically three first-round picks for the next 3 years. This year, next year, and the year after that, from number 12 this year all the way up to number 3 in the draft. The Eagles, who were at 6, trade down to garner one of those first-round picks as the Dolphins went from 3 back to 12, then back up to 6, which resulted in a net one first-round pick for basically trading down 3 spots. So there are pretty much 5 kind of consensus-ish first-round quarterbacks in this draft. The Jags are going to take Trevor Lawrence at number 1, pretty much a given at this point. Every sign and indication possible says Jaguars draft Trevor Lawrence, number 1 overall. And anybody who says otherwise is probably not very smart. The draft really starts at number 2, where the New York Jets own the number 2 pick, because they have not traded away Sam Darnold, who is their current quarterback. The media seems convinced, and oddsmakers as well, that the quarterback the Jets will be taking at number 2 is Zach Wilson out of BYU. I am not as in love with Zach Wilson as some of the sports media types. I'm always very leery of the group of 5 low D1 level quarterbacks that come out, especially when, I don't know, they just kind of get this sort of buzz that they can do certain things that other quarterbacks can't do, and that's not really true. And also, I don't know. Anyway, I'm just not as in love with Zach Wilson as a lot of the media is, but kind of seems like the Jets are going to take him at number 2, and then we'll see what happens with Sam Darnold. The Jets really played this poorly. Had they traded Darnold earlier, they probably could have got a second-round pick for him. Now they're going to probably have to let him go for a 3rd or a 4th. And maybe just let him walk, because they're not going to pick up his 5th-year option if they draft a quarterback. And then next year will be the 4th year of his deal, and they'd have to decline the 5th-year option. I don't know. Jets bungle that up. But at number three, the newly minted number three, that is the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not really sure which way they're going. Today they are at Mac Jones's pro day as opposed to Justin Fields out of Ohio State. The other quarterback in that top five area is Justin Fields out of Ohio State. And I'll tell you here in a little bit why I think he's sliding and some of the questions I have about him. But at number three, I think it's either going to be Lance or Mac Jones. Some people around Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and the 49ers, who seem to have known him pretty well, Chris Sims, who was a college roommate, guys who would know what these guys are thinking, keep saying, it's going to be Mac Jones, the guy who was kind of the consensus number five out of these five, like a late first round pick. I'm intrigued by the Mac attack. You don't just set the single season completion percentage record with without any good reason, especially when there's no cupcake non-conference people to beat up on. This year, the Alabama Crimson Tide played all SEC and then won the national title and did the whole thing. And Mac Jones was the quarterback that led that effort. Normally, you'd probably see him hyped up a lot more. But as it is, there were already two kind of definitely top two guys before the year in Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, been hyped up forever. Zach Wilson makes this big run. Trey Lance kind of pops onto the scene with his miraculous 2019 season. He didn't really play this year because FCS didn't play in the fall. But yeah, so they're going to take the 49ers. This is are going to take either Mac Jones or Trey Lance. I really don't think they pick Justin Fields just because when faced with the decision of which pro day you're going to go to with your whole squad between two guys who are in the top five and you choose one or the other to go and watch in person, that's probably a pretty good indication. They did also go and see Trey Lance's in person. So I don't think that it's going to be Justin Fields at three, but of course, could just all be a good smokescreen. Number four is the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know what they're going to do. They could take Fields. Who knows? The question becomes, when does a team trade up to get that fourth quarterback, whether it be Lance, Mac Jones, or Justin Fields? Because the Bengals are going to take a tackle, and I don't see them trading down. The Dolphins sitting at six is interesting, because if the Falcons just take somebody, a tackle, Jamar Chase, Penei Sewell, if they take somebody there, Bengals take a tackle, Dolphins are sitting at six and can still grab a quarterback to compete with Tua, because I think Tua sucks. I don't think he's long for the NFL, but we'll see. Because then the Lions probably aren't taking a quarterback. The next two picks, though, 8 and 9. 8 for sure, Panthers probably would take a quarterback. And 9, the Broncos. Seems like they're not sold on Drew Lock. A lot of people aren't. But would either of those teams just sit there? Or if it gets down to a point at like number 7, could a team like the Washington football team make a jump up from number 19 with, say, an extra first-round pick and move up and grab a quarterback? Because right now they have Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously not a long-term answer. The Bears are at 20. Those are kind of the QB needy teams, along with the Patriots at 15, that really have the capital or not necessarily the capital, but are in range of possibly moving up and striking a deal for first-round quarterback. But the one guy that just kind of slid, who was the consensus number two for 2 years prior to kind of pro day season, was Justin Fields. And a lot of people point out Ohio State quarterback scheme thing. I think something that's hurting him is injuries. He's been hurt a couple times, and I don't care what people say, but I would contribute that to his vegan diet. We have seen it all across sports, multiple sports. Guys with vegan diets become injury prone. They just do. They don't get the protein required by the body, especially in a physical sport. I also have questions with his arm. A lot of people make him out to be a mobile quarterback. I don't see that. I think he's probably he's the most pocket passer, maybe even behind Mac Jones. Nah, not really. Mac Jones doesn't really move, but I don't see Fields as the running quarterback that a lot of people have made him out to be. Trey Lance, yes. Trevor Lawrence, yes, definitely can run. Zach Wilson gets outside the pocket a lot. Justin Fields does not. He's not a runner, not a scrambler. And it's interesting to see him be described that way when he's really a pocket guy. But yeah, it's not talked about in the media, but I would put a few dollars down that NFL teams have noticed the vegan diet injury correlation and are saying, sorry, bruh, you ain't for us. We may like your arm talent. I don't necessarily. People think you're mobile. I don't think you are, et cetera, et cetera. But I bet NFL teams are saying vegan diets don't work for the NFL, where you're getting hit and beat up. You need the protein. Your muscles need it. Need strong bones. Obviously, we've seen some horrific injuries over the past couple of years. But that's kind of it. Well, I love Trey Lance. Didn't really talk about him much. He's not a day one starter, though. And that's why I think the Niners might jump in on him, because they have Jimmy G for this year. Lance really probably needs a year of seasoning in terms of getting used to the speed of the NFL game. Because from the FCS level, okay, from Power 5 Division 1 level to the NFL is like a culture shock for a lot of guys. That means that FCS is like a major, major leap in terms of speed of the game and then quality of talent. So I think he has probably the strongest arm, even ahead of Trevor Lawrence. Obviously not as accurate, not as polished as Trevor Lawrence. I think he has a higher ceiling than anybody in the class. But he also has a lower floor because he may not ever put it all together. But anyway, we'll see how the draft shakes out. I love the NFL draft. I love fantasy football. I love dynasty leagues. But let me know what you think, either about the politics side or the five QBs probably going in the first round of the NFL draft. Don't know what we're going to continue to make here, but we'll see you next time here on the Just Above Average podcast.